So are we all ready?
Yeah, we're all ready, Andrew.
We're all ready.
Yay!
Well, as ready as we'll ever be.
Are we all ready, Effie?
I'm absolutely listo.
We all ready, Ben?
Listo.
I know, where's Ben?
Ben? He's son at the table?
No, he's not here.
Is he drinking Prosecco in Tuscany?
Yeah. Which will inevitably mean that news lasts only 3 minutes as opposed to 30 minutes.
That's great. That means we can get this finished and go to the pub early.
In fact, yeah, on this kind of cold Monday, winter's Monday, yeah, it's a good idea. Let's do that. So, such lack of Ben brings us to the introduction of podcast, Tux Radar Podcast, Series 5, Episode 3. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Efrain Hernandez.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And as previously noted, there is no Ben. In this episode, we're going to have a Ben-free news.
Yeah, which means I'm doing it, so it's going to be very brief.
Do you have your tedious links?
I can try.
Yeah, totally.
Tedious, tenuous.
Discoveries of the week, which it says here is also done by Graham Morrison. Nice. There may or may not be some rants and raves. No S-Y...
What's that say? No, I don't know.
Sib?
No. Oh. I don't know, that was copied from Ben's notes from last time.
Oh, okay. God, Ben, everything just falls to pieces.
It does all fall to pieces without Ben.
And our publisher's away.
Yeah.
And the editor-in-chief of the Apple / Linux group is away. What do we do?
Can we go to the pub?
Yes, we can. There's some sort of challenge involving distro switching, although I can report... I don't want to spoil it. And there'll be an open ballot. And if you like the sound of such shenanigans, but actually done properly, you can buy a magazine which is written by us and edited, curated by us, lovingly compiled.
It is.
It is. Which is,
it's embarrassing how much it's become part of our lives.
It's so
sad. We should really put some distance between Linux format and ourselves. But it sucks you in, you know.
We really do.
Six long years.
Mm. Only 6 years?
Well, I think it's probably 6.5.
Yeah, so you can subscribe to Linux format at tinyurl.com/LXFOffer1. And if you don't like paper, if you're one of those swampy, Newbury bypass-hating, tree-hugging hippies, you can buy Linux format in paper-free format on Google Play.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And Zinio and Apple's new
Zinio.
Yes.
Nobody buys it on Zinio because it's rubbish.
And we're on Amazon yet?
I think we might
Are
be.
We?
Might
There's
be happening.
There were plans.
We're
to
also
be
on the Nook, but I've never seen Linux format on the Nook, so I can't say anything about it.
No. Don't you have a Nook? So yeah, you can do all of those things. Google Play, and if you search for, is it like technology and computers or something?
Well, Linux format, yeah, it's like the fourth biggest title in the science and technology. And I must say, thanks to our awesome listeners, probably the highest rated magazine on the whole Google Play Store.
It's pretty awesome.
Get in.
Yeah, which, yeah, feel the love.
Yeah. That's it. I've come to the end of this little line explaining what we should read.
So this would be Ben saying, okay, well, that's the news.
Yeah.
The news. Well, there's been a couple of big stories. In fact, these two big stories could have been the whole of the news section. And probably shouldn't talk about the first one too much because it's also related to our open ballot.
Seamless.
And it's Ubuntu, a Canonical, announcing tablet edition of its, I guess, its mobile OS. So a few months ago, they announced that they were doing a smartphone OS. And now they've expanded that and brought it to... The developer previews run on the Nexus 7 and Nexus 10 tablet devices. It's big news. It's good news. From what I haven't actually seen one live in action, unfortunately, but the videos that have been shown specifically of John O'Bacon doing demos, I think the user interface looks really good, and Unity makes a lot of sense on tablets and smartphones. There are problems, but good luck to Canonical. That's how I feel about it. You were dialed into the press conference thing, so you didn't have to go into Andrew. So, is there any secret awesome stuff that Mark Shuttleworth said that this is just going to be the world of Linux on the mobile platform?
There may have been, but I was quite tired, so I.
And it lasted an hour.
How are these people saying, why is Canonical profitable yet? As if it's a big story that Canonical isn't profitable yet. I mean, no, but it's a, you give away your desktop Linux operating system for free and make money later on with the tablet and mobile stuff. I mean, it's not, I don't know. Anyway, I just think they were missing the point. Nothing new, really. Essentially, it's tablets. They're like phones, but they're bigger, and they don't make phone calls. Of the same.
There's no. They've said they've got some hardware partnerships, but they haven't announced who they're
with. That's right. Well, a silicon partner was Mark's exact phrase.
Cool. Is that like a robot or a woman with large implants?
It's the Transform Clinic, whose owner I think also owns Doncaster Rovers.
Ah.
So expect to see Ubuntu branded red and white football shirts soon.
For £75.
Coming soon.
Which actually could be a good way of Canonical to make money.
Yeah.
Sell football shirts. Yeah, so we'll definitely get our hands on some tablets running Ubuntu, love, and we'll give it a go and tell you what we think. In news that I find even more exciting, and this won't be a surprise to anyone, it's Steam was officially launched on Linux for Ubuntu as the official distribution of choice, but it runs fine on other things like Fedora 18, and I've got it running on Arch. Steam is the big games portal. It's like an app store for games. It's a very good system. It works very well on the PC, and it's the company's very successful. Steam, the company behind Steam, Valve, is going to be making a Linux-based games console /PC. So Steam on Linux is a vital part of its strategy. It's going to compete with the PS4, which was announced last week, and the upcoming new Xbox. All of the next generation games consoles seem to be, with the exception of the Wii, are going to be based on PC technology, so it's a pretty level playing field, and Steam has the advantage of being relatively independent. It also means that as Linux users, we'll get lots of Linux games for our normal desktops. The launch, I think there's probably 60 titles or something at launch, and there's things like the original Half-Life, which looks pretty rough, but it's still a fantastic story. It's like £1.99, definitely worth playing if you've never played Half-Life before. And hopefully in a bit of time, Half-Life 2 will come out on Linux, and then maybe even an exclusive for Half-Life 3. So they're likely to be three of the best games ever made, ever. It's great. I'd love to have a Linux box as my games console. I had a PS3 and used to use Linux on it until Sony removed the Linux option. I guess we've spoken a lot about Steam, so I'll move on to the other three kind of loosely related stories. LG, the big manufacturer of everything but lots of televisions, has bought WebOS. And if you remember, WebOS was the really cool smart phone platform for Palm. Really nice interface, everybody liked it, but their Palm Pre's didn't do very well. It was open sourced, and then eventually fell into the hands of HP, who have sold it to LG, who are now going to use it as the interface for their smart TVs, which is cool. It's a really nice interface. That's Linux running on more televisions. Tizen 2, which is it's the successor of Mego, although it's not actually related to Mego. It's when Intel left Mego, it joined the Tizen project, which is hosted by the Linux Foundation, which is another mobile phone operating system. This one with a primary focus on HTML5 apps, because that seems to be the way things are going for the next generation of smartphones. HTML5 apps, of course, are going to be cross-platform and compatible with a wide range of devices. It gets over the proprietary hegemony of place things like Apple. Tizen 2 boasts about being the best HTML5 platform. Certainly, there are tons and tons of cool features. I've just taken a quick look at the SDK that was released last week. Enhanced web framework, NFC support, Bluetooth support, web runtime stuff, core video, calendars, contacts, galleries, a web IDE with WYSIWYG design. It sounds like a really nice system if you want to get into mobile phone development. As2 is our final story of the news section, which is Firefox OS, very similar to Tizen, but also gaining a lot of momentum and looking very cool, looking nicer than Tizen. Mozilla have just announced that they've got 18 carriers committed to shipping Firefox OS on their smartphones. Firefox OS is very much the Linux way of doing things. It's also HTML5 based. I know HTML5 is a pretend technology, but now that phones are powerful, it means that you can run kind of web apps at native speeds. And of course, it means that they should all run with one another. Firefox OS is built to run web apps like this. It's its whole raison d'etre. Of course, it's got the whole Mozilla Firefox philosophy behind it. More phones, more carriers, more open source. It's a brilliant thing, a great antidote to, well, the Apple, the Apple proprietary world, but also in a little way, Android isn't that open either. So it's all going crazy for mobile smartphone stuff.
18 carriers.
Yeah,
that's massive.
How many have Ubuntu announced for their phone system?
Exactly zero.
Zero.
I mean, no. Yeah. There's like Deutsche Telekom, China Unicom. Qtel, Singtel, Sprint, Telecom Italia, Telefonica, big companies. I imagine they're going to do it for their medium-priced or low-priced smartphone products, but that doesn't mean that the phones themselves won't be any good. It's still a massively wide market, especially with Nokia dropping Symbian. I don't know why this has kind of turned into a smartphone news section, but
because it's smartphone world.
That's true.
It's happening right now.
That's right. Mobile World Congress in Barcelona.
We're reporting live from Barcelona.
So that's it. That's the news. That didn't go
that's
too badly.
Great news.
No, that's really
that's
good.
Pretty good. Close game.
Well, I also put down that Ruby 2.0 has been released. Ruby is massive language. Oh. We're doing Ruby tutorials in the magazine. They've been really popular. 1.9 was out 5 years ago, so Ruby 2.0 is a big release. If you're into scripting languages, check out our tutorials. Check out Ruby 2.0.
Today is Ruby Tuesday.
Yeah.
Although it is Monday.
That takes us on to discovery of the week. This is going to be difficult because I know most of us have been really unwell the last 2 weeks. I've been really sick, only just starting to feel better. Yeah. So I've not discovered all that much, although I do have a couple of discoveries.
I got one.
Okay, go for it, Effie.
It's again my favorite platform, Android. It's an Android app called TV Catch Up, and as the name says, it's a TV catch-up app. Basically, it's Freeview live stream Freeview channels on your tablet, on your mobile phone, obviously using the internet. But it's actually really good because what I found sometimes is when you go to a particular website to look at live streams such as BBC iPlayer or especially 4OD. 4OD is very clunky. It's full of adverts at the beginning. I think they played something like 3 or 4 adverts before you actually manage to watch a live stream, if there's a live stream or a library program. And TV Catch-Up has something like 50 channels, and most of them are Freeview channels. But also, it's not just the channel, but it's like the 1 hour behind channel as well added. So you go, Film 4, and then Film 4. Plus one, whatever they call it. The quality is really good. It's really fast. The interface is actually lovely. It's really simple. And you don't have any settings to go through or anything like that. So basically everything is encapsulated in one single box. It's really, really cool. It has a few adverts that you have to go through, but really they're very short, very quick. And then you can enjoy your live stream. At the moment, it's just live stream. Yeah. It doesn't have a library for each.
I think it's the license channel that they use and only enables them to broadcast live.
It is only UK based broadcasters, but it's actually really, really cool. It's really, really fantastic.
It's good if in the UK the Freeview coverage is pretty poor.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, we don't get Dave where I live, which is a channel that's all right. Dave is broadcast on TV catch-up, yeah. So you can always watch it like that.
And that's a good thing. If you've got a tablet or a mobile device that has a HDMI output, then, and like you say, if you could pull reception on your house, then that's it. You just use your tablet as your Freeview box. Sorted.
That's
respect
pretty cool.
You.
The Raspberry Pi has a HDMI output.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. There you go.
I think it's based on flash.
It's based on flash, yeah. So, I think so.
I don't know. Don't know how it'll work on a Raspberry Pi.
But it's really cool. It's really fast. It depends on your hardware or your device, but it is actually really cool. Very simple. That's what I really like. It's just a list of channels that you go through. They go of things like, I don't know, Al Jazeera, if you want to watch those news. So, yes. Really cool, fantastic. That's it. That's my discovery.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
Nice, thanks, Effie. Shall I go next?
Yeah.
My first discovery is that I don't think tablets are all that hot. I don't think they're the future. I've had a tablet for 3.5 years. Use them all the time, and I've just started to feel pretty deep, depressing fatigue at picking it up and basically not doing anything productive with it. It does have its productive place. I use it for programming synthesizers, and it's great for the kids and car journeys. But there's something that is sapping my soul in tablets. And I really am starting to feel it quite strongly. I believe every it's the same as smartphones to an extent. Mm. I don't think it's going to last. I think they'll change. They've changed the shape of technology for the future in a certain way, but I don't think in the way that everybody's jumping on it, like it's the savior of publishing and it's the savior of computing. I still really want a decent laptop. So that's one discovery. The other discovery is more Linux-based, and it's a command called fping, all one word. And because I was doing some discovery on our local network to find devices that I've plugged in. And fping is like ping, but you can do it, I guess it's flood ping, because you can do it to lots of devices at the same time. In fact, you can ping a whole class of IP addresses on your local network. So if you type in fping-g 192.168.1.0/24, it'll do all of that subdomain on your network, which is good, in fact, if you're building up local caches of IP addresses and things like that. But it's also very useful if you genuinely want to ping a range of IP addresses. I know it's a specific thing. Ping is where, it's famously named after the ping of a submarine sonar, where it sends out a signal, and if you get the ping, it's the signal bouncing back off a remote server. So this enables you to do it for lots of servers at the same time. Never knew the command that existed. It's really useful. And they're my discoveries. Also, the games reviews in the Steam thread on TuxRadio are brilliant. I was half thinking of turning that into an article in the next format. That was really good. We did a Steam announcement and put up the games that we'd previously reviewed, which is only a handful of them, but some great people, I think Spangwidges and a few other people, have put their own reviews of all the other games, and it's really interesting thread.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's round up done, isn't it?
Well, it could be, yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Brilliant. Maybe this is the future of user-generated content.
Yeah. We become the curators. They'd love that.
So going back to your first discovery, didn't we talk about this a few months ago, that we were saying that tablets and this kind of mobile devices are not the ultimate device, that we sort of banking everything on them.
But I find them wonderful. You know, from a technology perspective, I find it incredible that these multi-touch, thin, powerful devices can do so much.
Yeah.
But I just pick them up and read the news like at 20-minute intervals, and it's killing me. I my life would be better without them.
They're still good traveling devices.
Yeah,
you take them with you.
But then a good book. I think I've read lots of books on my tablets and smartphones. It's enabled me to read a book on while waiting for the train to be delayed. Train was 45 minutes late this morning, you know, and I've read lots of books. Finished 1984.
Oh, excellent.
Wow. Yeah. I really like the ending.
Yeah, I like the ending as well. Is it Ben who's saying he doesn't like it?
Yeah, yeah.
See, this podcast is so much better without Ben.
It's just done. So when I read it, I haven't actually read it.
It's good. Obviously. So they have their uses. They have their uses. I'm describing it in poetic terms because that's how it makes me feel. There's no direct like word to describe the emptiness that picking up a tablet and reading the news brings on.
I bet there is a chairman.
What we need is Mike.
We do. Let's see if we can work on that. Let's get Mike back for the 1 minute.
Let's do
things.
It.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, rambling discoveries.
This is great. This is good. I've discovered some stuff. I've discovered VNC. Which is magic. It's it means that you can have your Raspberry Pi plugged into your router on top of the in the hallway. Well, I've aggrandizingly termed it a hallway. the cold bit next to the door, and be rather than have to sit in the cold bit next to the door, if you want to use the Raspberry Pi, you can install a VNC server on the Raspberry Pi. And a VNC client on your laptop, which is in next to the radiator, and then you can be warm while connecting remotely to the Raspberry Pi. And I don't know how clever it is, but it feels like magic.
Yeah, remote desktops they still feel like magic, even though they're old.
Mm. It's from 1999 when VNC was first discovered.
Wow.
By gold miners in Cambridge, accidentally, they came across this fossilised VNC, and then found a bit of rabbit DNA in there, brought it back to life. So that's really good. I like that.
And you don't need a mouse or a keyboard for your Raspberry Pi.
No,
you
exactly.
Just plug it in the network cable.
So to get the Raspberry Pi set up, I had to move the telly into the hall. And leave loads of wires and stuff lying about, and I'm not allowed to leave wires lying about. That's like the worst thing I could ever do. So it's great to be able to get things working clutter free. Other discovery is that the password that I invented to securitize the VNC server, they only accept up to 8 characters.
Yeah.
So I did the brilliant XKCD sugar lump. Horse tasty password, and it just truncated it to sugar lump. This isn't secure, this isn't very good at all. And I know that you can use SSH tunneling and things, and sort of more secure protocols to pipe your desktop.
I don't think anybody worries about VNC security.
I couldn't be bothered.
Well, no, on your LAN, unless you've got port 5901 open, no one's going to have access to it anyway.
Exactly. So, a minor annoyance, really, but but there it is. Third discovery.
Maybe you're spoiling us.
This discovery comes to us courtesy of Stacey Black, who sometimes does a bit of work for us on Linux Format.
Mm-hmm.
And she's sitting next to me at the moment, well, not in this room, but in my desk back at Linux Format Towers, who informed me of the age that Mary Shelley was when she wrote Frankenstein. Obviously, regular listeners will know that Johnny Marr was only 22 when the Smiths split up, which I find a constant bugbear.
Well, it's after passing 22, I imagine.
After,
yeah.
Yes.
So it was a challenge before then.
Would it? Can I be in the Smiths? At 21, I had hope. Yeah, dear. So, would anyone like to have a guess about how old Mary Shelley was wrote Frankenstein?
I think I know.
Well, yeah. It's obviously going to be young, the way the conversation is headed. So, yeah. I'm going to say something outrageous, like 21.
So 17.
18.
She was 8. She was 18 years old. It's not as if you read Frankenstein and think, you know what, this is good. I wonder what she'll do in a few years when she's improved her style and, you know, got a few more original ideas. It's perfect. Frankenstein is perfect, and it's
and it's made a massive contribution to world culture.
Yeah.
For the last what did she write it about 200 years ago?
Amazing.
It's like spawned genres and films and everything, and to have written that, you know, at the same age Johnny Marr was when he wrote Hand in Glove. It's just incredible.
I wasn't doing anything when I was 18.
I think I was working in a factory packing Lynx shower gel and deodorant for £3 an hour.
Wow.
Cool. Awesome discoveries. Oh, fantastic.
So that's the halfway reminder. We may or may not rant or rave about something or other. Still don't know what no sim means. Those are the notes bequeathed to us by Ben. Unfortunately, he's in Tuscany.
Unfortunately for whom? For us.
Unfortunately for us. Not unfortunately for him.
For him.
Yeah. Unless he's broken his arm again. Single-handedly sailing round Cape Horn.
Tripping over a bunch of grapes or something.
Oh no!
There's the disappointing results of a challenge and an open ballot. So let's continue with this underwhelming avalanche of bathos. Do we have any rants and raves, anybody?
No, let's just crack on, shall
we? Okay, cool. No sib, we don't know what that means. Challenge.
Challenge us.
Challenge us. Boom.
Well, it wouldn't be fair to properly go into the terms of the challenge when Ben's not here.
No.
So I think we always actually plan to kind of make the challenge last for a month.
We did. How about an interim report on the challenges?
I think that's a great idea.
Because I've got some feedback about Arch.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And I've got some feedback about... Mint.
Yeah. Are you doing Mint Debian edition? Oh no, that's Ben.
It's just down here as Mint.
Just normal Mint.
Which is actually very easy because I do run Mint on other computers, so...
You're making a mockery of this.
Yeah. Well, I didn't choose the distribution of distributions. Mint. Great. Great desktop. What can I say? I've got it on my netbook after trying lots and lots of different things on the netbook. I know that the idea of this challenge is to put it on our main machines. But I do want to see whether Steam runs just as well on Mint, because I think Mint will be a much less scary option for lots of people to recommend for Steam. And I've not had a chance to do that. But generally, you know, it's no surprise. I've used Mint quite a lot. I think it's the best netbook distribution, and I'll give it a proper go on my desktop this week. Which I run Arch on normally.
Did you install the full version on the netbook?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did, because I don't like any of the cut down user interfaces. So, yeah, I've actually got Cinnamon running on there at the moment, which I don't know what the terms of this challenge was, but Cinnamon runs best. I just like a standard normal desktop.
Have you had a go with Ubuntu yet, Effie?
No, I haven't. I haven't been able.
But also run Ubuntu on one of your machines.
Well, I was running my Switch. I switched to Mint. You see, that's the thing.
Right, I
couldn't cope with the... that was a previous version of Ubuntu. I couldn't cope with the whole Unity thing. So I just gave up and completely deleted it from the box. But yeah, I will go back to it.
Canonical's been pretty ambiguous about how easy they're going to make it to be able to disable the Amazon search in the upcoming version of Ubuntu. I'm really surprised that they've not come straight out and said, right, it's going to be disabled by default. And they're not doing that. Just a little side note. I'm really surprised, because it's such a faux pas. It's such a wrong thing to do. It's probably, you know, part of the terms of some very lucrative agreement with Amazon.
Yeah, I think so.
I've had a go at installing Arch. I've not got as far as using it yet. I just don't know why anyone would bother. If you can download an ISO of Ubuntu or Mint or SUSE and put it in the disk, and then half an hour later have something that works perfectly well. Mm. I don't know why you'd go to the extra effort of having having to installing something that needs an install guide. I know that John was always very keen on Arch and saying that, oh, but the installation guide is very well written. So, well, yeah. I shouldn't need an installation guide. I should just be able to have a pop-up screen that says, you know, do you want to, you know, guiding me through it step by step, and whether that's graphical or text-based, like the old Debian installer, I don't really care, as long as it's clear and sensible and it makes sense.
Yeah.
And if I make a mistake, I can go back and do something again. I shouldn't need like an extra machine open next to me to decipher all of these prompts and tell me about...
Well, hand-editing configuration files.
Yeah, I just don't get it.
So isn't it? It's just because Arch is not one of those distributions that is designed for the regular user or for...
Who's supposed to benefit from this, well, and how are you supposed to benefit?
Maybe I can answer it as the Arch user.
Right.
Because it was me that used it. I use Arch at the office. I think it's a fantastic distribution. It really, having spent so long at Linux Torvalds, I've used them all. And after, I think it came off the back of using Ubuntu or Kubuntu. So as a KDE user, it meant I could get as close to a vanilla KDE experience as I possibly could. And I think as KDE users, Arch is the best kind of experience because you can... Because you have to manually set up every service and daemon that's running in the background, you only enable what you actually use. But it is tedious getting it to work. It is tedious having to go through the configuration files and follow the well-written wiki just to get an OS up and running. But it does mean, and I do think I've got the best KDE desktop that I've ever had in 10 years running on top of Arch as a result. And it also, and I love the fact that you can stay up to date continuously with all of the latest releases. So it's worth it in the end if you're going to stick with the distribution for quite some time. Mm. It's probably not worth it for a 2-week test. And when I built the arcade machine, because I so love the customizability of Arch and the fact that I wanted a machine that wasn't doing anything in the background, I went with Arch again, but not wanting to go through all of this blithe configuration rubbish again, it's tedious. I just installed Manjaro Linux, which is like a quick, easy install version of Arch. So maybe that's what you should try. Yeah. Just try Manjaro. I'm sure that's allowed. Because Manjaro solves... It's the tediousness of actually going through all the configuration problems, which you know are just going to be a one-off, and then you're not like particularly going to learn it. You're going to move on. But the end result of what you get is worth it, I think.
That makes sense, in a way. But I sort of subscribe more to Effie's philosophy of free software and choice thing. It's not so much if I disagree with Unity. I mean, Effie said that he couldn't be bothered to stick with it.
So
there's always something easier. Likewise with Arch. For the purposes of this challenge, so as not to shortchange our listeners, whose feedback I admire and respect every single fortnight / week, I will persevere with Arch, but under normal circumstances...
You wouldn't have bothered.
I'd say, nah, no way.
Okay, that's not a bad update, status update. I guess we can give our final verdicts next time.
Yeah. I wonder how Ben's doing.
What did Ben have to do? Oh, he's got Debian.
He's got mine. He's got, Mint Debian.
Okay, cool.
Right, so open ballot then.
Yay!
To avoid pasting horrible advertising banners into the OpenOffice document that I print out every fortnight, I only select the responses, which means that the question that we pose, I always forget it by the time we get here. I think it was something to do with Ubuntu's tablet.
I wrote it, so I should be able to remember. I think it was, does it excite you?
Yes.
Does the Ubuntu tablet edition excite you?
Before we get on to anything, the reasons.
Great response to this, because we did worry that people would be suffering from canonical fatigue if we asked yet another canonical related question. But it was definitely the biggest news story of the last 2 weeks.
I deleted them, unfortunately. How did I do that? What a fail! One day I'm going to learn how to use keyboards properly. But my... Oh, yeah, this is the wrong version I've printed out. I had a header just it was I'd called it something like laconic.
Oh, right.
Like the men who threw back Xerxes at Thermopylae. And
Xerxes was the name of the bad computer in System Shock 2. Wow. Really good game. Cool. Really good game.
I was just going to give an imaginary high five to the laconic people who answered with a single word. because mostly that word was no. you've got an anonymous forum. You know that people read it and listen to it. No, it's so tempting to just spout on about your own waffle.
Especially after spending 10 minutes trying to get through our capture.
Yeah, we're really sorry about that. Yeah.
We are going to fix it.
Yeah. I just admire that there are people out there, that there are still, you know, brave, decisive men who could just say no.
And it is an open ballot, after all. Yeah.
It's good. Really says, this is about Ubuntu. Are you excited by the Ubuntu's tablet edition? Vaporware, really not verified. That's a bit of a silly name. It would be bad enough to be excited by a real tablet, let alone an imaginary one. There's no such thing as an Ubuntu tablet yet, you know. That is my main criticism, really, of the Ubuntu tablet, and also the Ubuntu phone.
Yeah. I think it's premature to announce these things without having partnerships in place at the very least, and saying you can buy these things in 4 weeks.
In Tandy.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, my contact within Canonical.
Yeah. Mark.
not Mark, the other contact. Says that they do often have a tendency of putting the cart before the horse.
Yeah, like 300 million Ubuntu users by 2014.
Yes, exactly. That's what I think.
I like saying that every episode.
They need to bring Mary Shelley back, because that's just the sort of awesome thing that she could do. Some people are excited. And I admire that as well. Neil says, yes, this looks brilliant. I'm now starting to see the point of tablets and smartphones. Canonical and the Ubuntu community are innovating. It's a shame more people can't get behind them instead of slagging them off. Sultan of Swing says, yes, I am. With the Vivaldi on hold, an Ubuntu tablet must be the next best thing. Canonical are clearly trying to converge their software on multiple devices. And from my point of view, I hope they succeed. We really need some software then that can be customised. And assuming Canonical allows the tablet distro to do that, then we'll have more freedom with the device.
Convergence is a big part of it, isn't it? Because it seems like Mark Shuttleworth's pet project to make a device into an all-doing thing. You plug it into a keyboard and a screen and it becomes your PC as well as your tablet OS. And interesting that he mentioned the Vivaldi, because Aaron Sago waded into the debate by saying that the Ubuntu operating system and this convergence isn't all it appears to be, because the mobile version of Unity is written using QML. Whereas it's not QML on the desktop, so it's a fallacy that you can write once, like, run it everywhere. But I suppose it's just too early days. The Canonical's trying very hard to get developers behind it, because everything needs developer momentum to mean anything. They've written themselves out of the Android equation, unfortunately, because it won't be running those apps.
Can't see why they've done that.
So I don't know.
You said earlier, Graham, that the idea of tablets fills you with a sense of ennui.
Yeah.
Of Proustian regrets for touchscreens past. Shimmy says, never got the idea of tablets and still don't. I can't see where I would use it between my phone and my laptop. I O'Connor says, I think a tablet might come in handy for sales presentations, which I don't do. Perhaps tablets will replace phones. It might be kind of nice having more screen space for the apps, yet my Nexus phone works just fine. Tablet Schmablet says, Burgess Meredith.
Yeah.
Burgess Meredith, anybody?
No, sorry.
No. I'll give you a clue.
Because they was bums. This guy's a killer, almighty.
You gotta eat lightning and crap thunder.
Oh, that's the trainer of Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, yeah.
Burgess Meredith says...
I thought he died. He died in Rocky 3.
Yes, he did. But he was seen in...
It was always in the background. It was his voice of his conscience all the time.
Yeah. And he was there in flashback in Rocky 5.
He's been in all of them.
Yeah, was he Rocky Balboa as well?
And now he's waded.
You said the debate. You say it again. Yes, he was in all of them.
Now he's waded into the Ubuntu tablet debate. Awesome!
Wow. Where's the link?
I'm not going to do the voice all the way through, but Burgess Meredith says, "Oh, these kids today with their pagers, Palm Pilots, Apple Newtons." Am I the only computer geek that has no interest whatsoever in smartphones, tablets, etc.? Give me a desktop or a large screen laptop and not an Ubuntu, please. Cell phones are for finding out if I need to pick up milk on the way home from work.
They're useful for that. Definitely, well, I can...
That's consistent with Rocky 3, again, where he's training in the foyer of that hotel and he has to keep stopping for photographs girls keep wanting to give him a peck on the cheek.
Yeah.
And then he has to go back to Siberia and get chased around by KGB agents. Oh, that was Rocky 4.
That's sorry. Rocky 4, yeah, you mixed the two of them.
Yeah. They all mixed into one.
It's convergence. It's convergence in action.
Huge says, "No, I'm not excited. I don't like tablets. I like my machine to do what I want. Tablets are not powerful enough. They cost too much. They get dirty, smudgy fingerprints on the screen. They tend to be more locked down. I couldn't give a monkeys about tablets, even if they run Linux." Too Long in IT says, "I agree with everything Huge said." I also agree. I mean, I agree with everybody so far. I agree that I'm not excited because they don't exist yet. I agree that I want them to work really, really well and that Unity will work fantastic in a touchscreen device. I also agree that I don't see the point in tablets.
But I also feel good for Canonical. I feel like this the whole smartphone tablet thing, it seems to have given them a whole new lease of life. The company seems to be coming alive. You know, they're hiring lots of people. You know, there are lots of places, like they're at Mobile World Congress, they're at CES. You know, this is a Linux company that's famous for making a Linux distribution, and it's getting a lot of positive publicity and lots of the main places and a lot of pundits talking about whether it'll be successful or not. I don't know whether it'll be successful in the end, but I respect Canonical a lot for trying to do this.
I think you're right.
I hope it works.
I think you're right. I think there's also the fact that... I mean, I'm happy if they are successful, but then it's brilliant. That only means that the whole Unity project then has some sort of coherent sense from the very beginning. There was actually a endpoint to the whole Unity project that is just sort of links new devices and so on and so on. Because at the beginning, on the first release of Ubuntu with Unity, and you never really saw what was the point of it.
No.
What was the point of Unity? Now it sort of makes sense having it on different platforms.
I still think the Unity desktop is woeful.
Mm.
I just wish they'd stuck with the old style GNOME desktop because it would look wonderful.
Mm.
You know, not even Apple is going into convergence extent.
What I mean is about the idea. It's about the idea of Unity making it look like a device, a mobile device. And now it makes sense.
Yeah,
and hopefully they'll be successful. Yeah.
The idea, I would love to see what Ubuntu's design team would have done if they'd got hold of GNOME 3.
Yeah.
I think they'd make it look really
good. Yeah, I mean, the effort they've put into the UI, like the split-screen multitasking stuff, that looked quite good in the demos. And if that was actually going back into the GNOME desktop as a kind of a feature, it would be really cool for everyone. But in fact, it's just going to work on... just Canonical, which is a little bit sad. But I love the idea that when you've got apps running in that half-screen mode, they become smartphone apps because it's much more like a smartphone screen resolution and aspect ratio. So you create a smartphone interface, you create a tablet interface. When it's running side by side, it becomes a smartphone interface. So you can genuinely do decent multitasking like that. However, I'd still rather use a laptop.
I really like tablets. I think tablets are a really good device. I mean, especially when it comes down to education. I read more books now that I got a tablet. I actually done more research about other things now that I got a tablet. It's there. It's available all the time. Yeah. You don't have to go through the hassle of turning your computer on. Okay, it probably is.
You don't have to go through the hassle of turning your computer on. No. I'm sure this is the case, guys. When I were a lad, I had to use my finger and press the on switch. And then wait for 10 seconds.
Especially when I'm watching my telly. I can't get the computer, watch the telly, and got my tablet with me, my sandwich or my tacos. There you go, sorted. It gets the screen gets muggy, but hey.
If anyone from the NHS is listening, I've solved Britain's growing obesity epidemic. Rothgar says, I cannot see how this or Ubuntu phone will prosper at all. Let's see what they have so far. No hardware manufacturers, no major apps, no advertising, no customer recognition. On top of that, they have the most confusing interface I have seen on any tablet. Who can tell me how many swipe gestures it has? I counted 7. And no ecosystem outside of Amazon affiliate links. But can't you just get a Kindle Fire for that? Mm. At least the Kindle Fire has a major company behind it and probably will cost less than an Ubuntu tablet. And more Ubuntu skepticism from... Skepticism? Skepticism?
Skepticism.
That's easy for you to say.
Organic Rodent says, I'm eagerly awaiting a 32GB Nexus 10. I kind of lost faith in Ubuntu/Canonical when Unity was introduced. Try as I might, I just don't seem to be able to get on with it. Rather perversely, though, I do seem to manage with GNOME 3. That said, XFCE rules for ease of use and simplicity. How about a tablet that runs XFCE?
Probably not, actually. Not on the resolution of a Nexus 10.
No.
We could just imagine what that looks like.
Hugh doesn't like Canonical. Canonical have been doing a very good job lately of showing how out of touch with the community they are. Invading users' privacy, for example, I won't touch Ubuntu with a barge pole these days.
It's like third or fourth down in the DistroWatch rankings.
Is that bad?
That's still fairly high compared with all the hundreds of distributions that are
out there. But years of dominating.
Yeah.
They won't care. It didn't bring them any money.
I don't really mind, to be honest. I found it really telling when I was enjoying mini burgers in the Canonical building, chatting with a lot of really, really smart people. One person seemed to announce himself as possibly sub-smart when he reckons that the Ubuntu phone thing, one of the great advantages you have is that you can... The interface looks so good, you can brag about it with your mates in the pub.
Mm.
Because that's what... Apparently, I don't know, I'm out of touch with the kids today. Apparently, you put your phone in the middle of the table when you're all sitting around drinking your carbonated fizz water.
Red Bull.
And go, ha, look at that, look at my phone. My phone looks better than your phone. And the phrase he used was bragging rights. Oh. I think it's aimed at someone different to me. It's not aimed at someone with my sensibilities.
Well, the kids aren't going to go for it because they're not going to be able to run their apps.
Yeah.
You know, because all someone's going to have to do is, well, okay, so what's the app ecosystem like on your phone? They're going to be like, there aren't any. You know, the web app thing, which is very cool. It's a great thing on the Ubuntu desktop and now on the smartphones and tablets, is their little web apps where they turn Gmail and Facebook into these kind of separate HTML5 apps just after you visit the site. That kind of integration into the phone is brilliant. And, you know, everybody brags about Angry Birds, but people are just obsessed with collecting apps. That's what I would say would win any kind of bragging contest, not an Ubuntu phone. In fact, if I was them, I'd go the opposite and say it's not about bragging rights, it's just simply about having the best phone experience.
Yeah. It's like kids.
Kids.
Kids don't use even Android.
What would Mary Shelley say?
Mary Shelley would probably compare it with the way that the way that certain companies and certain products sell more during a recession, like sales of nice dresses go down when people are skint, but sales of lipstick and cheap things go up. So if you want to recession-proof your product, then you have lots and lots of cheap things. For example, apps. Like the kids that are spending their pocket money, they can afford to download something for 99p or £1.99. Even, don't matter how many times you point out to them that over the last month they've spent 500 quid on apps and they could have, you know, they could have bought actually something decent with their money, like just frittered it away, like the irresponsible youth they are. So it must be really, really important for how much money you make out of a platform, how many apps you have, and again, it just seems like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
She'd do it. She'd be looking really cool when she said it as well. I've got no idea what Mary Shelley looked like, but I bet she looked awesome.
There's a few paintings of her.
Yeah, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. The vision in my head, with the two bolts sticking out of her neck, and like the lightning bolt coming down.
It's alive!
Well, it sounds like we've solved that conundrum, really.
Yeah.
We're not too bothered, but we would like to be bothered.
I just wish them all the success. I really do hope it works.
I just want to see one life. I want to use one really to make an educated opinion.
Yeah.
To have an educated opinion about the whole thing.
Yeah, true.
And it would be nice to know whether they have some sort of financial and commercial links with other companies so they can at least have some sort of aim, some commercial aim on this enterprise.
Well, I'll tell you what, maybe if we go back and delete all of the negativity and re-record this so that we have nothing but unalloyed joy at the idea of an Ubuntu tablet, maybe then we can persuade somebody to give us one for free. Oh, and the laconic men I've just found, Viking Penguin and Anonymous Sparrow, they both say no.
What, together at the same time?
Well, they do now because I've copied and pasted them into the same bit of the page.
It sounds like there's mostly no's and mes.
Well, actually, no. I've been editorially selective, but when I was going through, most people say yes, they are excited.
Oh, okay, cool.
That's good.
It's just that they're excited about all the same thing, while the people that say no all have different reasons for saying no.
That's good.
Cool. Yeah. Well, that's it, isn't it? Awesome. We've squeezed about as much out of that story as we possibly could. In fact, it's dragged on for 55 minutes.
Out of vaporware.
So that's it. That's the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening. We'll be rejuvenated and rebenerated.
Rebenerated.
Next episode in 2 weeks' time. Don't forget, you could keep us all, you know, employed by buying the magazine. Right.
Goodbye.
So long.
Bye.